This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on Building Bridges, Obama continues Bush policy toward undocumented. Lock them up and throw away the key. But first, Afghanistan and Iraq vets have been traveling to Washington, D.C. to meet with members of Congress and tell them to rethink Afghanistan. We now, thanks to Robert Greenwald and Brave New Films, bring you the testimony of Rick Reyes, a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War, to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in April 2009.
I want to thank the members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for having me here. I also want to say that I love my country, and that is why I'm here today. My name is Rick Reyes, and a veteran of both Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom. I served with the United States Marine Corps as an infantry rifleman. I come from very humble beginnings, and a son to both an immigrant father and mother from Mexico. On the night of the September 11 attacks, my battalion sat in port in Australia. That night, we were told we were going to war with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda forces, and for the next month, while the administration formulated a plan, we prepared to go to war with the conviction of fighting for justice and the American way. Our mission was to locate and capture suspected members of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda forces. Through my experience as an infantry rifleman, implemented past and current policy have found it almost impossible to locate and capture the Taliban because there isn't any effective way to separate them from the innocent civilian population. Patrols were conducted through populated neighborhoods. There were kids running around and playing while we occupied their streets. Mothers running behind after those kids, making sure they stay out of trouble and out of our way, and fathers trying to make a living for the little that they have. U.S. hired translators would tell us where suspected Taliban or Al-Qaeda would be found. We would follow their lead, often planning attacks and breaking into people's homes. We wouldn't enter these homes or situations quietly, but instead trained to fight with the vigilance of encountering death at every turn. Although we were on the hunt for suspected Taliban forces, at the end of it, we found that these dangerous missions resulted with very poor consequences by destroying innocent lives. We weren't fulfilling our objective of capturing terrorists, but instead creating enemies out of civilians. As a Marine trying to ensure justice, I began losing sight of why I was there, and the conviction began to fade. Because our mission was to capture suspected Taliban and had no successful way of being able to distinguish them, we had no other choice but to suspect the entire civilian population, innocent or not. One day we stopped at gunpoint, detained, beating, and nearly killing an innocent man, only to find out he was just traveling down the road to deliver milk to his children. There were hundreds of incidents like this one. Almost 100% of the time, we would find that suspected terrorists turned out to be innocent civilians. How can you tell the difference between the Taliban and Afghan civilians? You can't. It all stopped making sense. Later, I found out that these translators were being compensated on the amount of intelligence they were able to provide. So it was their incentive to be able to provide as much intelligence as possible without any way to know if the information being provided was false. I strongly feel that the military occupation and intervention is not the answer. A lot of these men and women serving our country in the armed forces have been desperately worn and stretched out too thin by having them serve in up to 4 tours overseas. If we aren't killing them on the ground due to a flawed policy, we are definitely killing them in spirit. I love my country. I never once while serving did I feel I was protecting America. But instead, we were harboring the worst of sentiments in these foreign Middle Eastern countries. We were creating more enemies. As a kid, I envisioned myself serving my country and fighting for freedom. But when the opportunity presented itself, it was stripped from me. And instead, I was forced to become a tyrant. Our troops are also experiencing a very low morale, which oftentimes translates into high suicide rates. There is just a huge array of reasons why, at the minimum, this occupation needs to be rethought. We should not be sending any more troops into Afghanistan. In some respects, this entire occupation has become counterproductive. As a Marine, I was willing to give my life for my country and still am, but invading and occupying Afghanistan, sending more troops to solve what is a political problem is not the answer. I urge these senators to rethink Afghanistan while there is still time. I can almost guarantee that sending more troops will mean more civilian and U.S. troop casualties, not for war, but for occupation. Sending more troops will not make the U.S. safer. It will only build more opposition against us. I urge you on behalf of truth and patriotism to consider carefully and rethink Afghanistan. More troops, more occupation is not the answer. Thank you.
The Obama administration has continued the Bush administration's enforcement-only approach to immigration, leading to the deportation of countless family members, many with no criminal record, leaving the deportees' families abandoned.
A national gathering of the New Sanctuary Movement under the banner Celebrate and Defend Community Without Borders brought that message and their protest to the Varick Street Detention Center.
Now, Obama continues Bush policy towards undocumented. Lock them up and throw away the key, with families in sanctuary and supporters of the new sanctuary movement. With Lori, the national coordinator of one of the sanctuary movements.
The national movement, based out of Kansas City.
Tell us first about what's happening in Kansas.
We have quite a few immigrants, and ours came out of, much like most coalitions, in congregations, seeing what was going on with our brothers and sisters through the broken immigration law, and how are we going to not only walk with them, but amplify their voice so that their stories could be heard. Why we're here today is over deportation, and it's in Kansas City. We're one of the notorious least jail space areas. So when someone is detained in Kansas City, they are moved to seven different jails up to 5 to 7 hours away, and family members can't visit them. So that's one of the issues that we address. The other issue we have is we're in ongoing talks both with the community around community harassment and racism, and we offer a listening group. That mirrors a lot of what's going on in the national. Even though we're in the middle of the country, most of the issues people are addressing are how to keep families together, family unity, and the deportation issues.
Focus for a second on the question of the detentions themselves. How long are people kept? What's the process like? Are they moved around? Take us through that.
It mirrors what's going on nationally. In Kansas City, they're very easily picked up on simple traffic violations. They ask for a driver's license, so then they're pulled in. One of the issues we try to address is the local police department very frequently turns them over to ICE, and ICE will place a detainer on them, and they're thrown into this whole deportation. Meanwhile, what they've done is they're trying to go to work, trying to pick up a gallon of milk, and the family doesn't know where they are. The other issue is you can't make cell phone calls to call your family and say, I've been picked up. Finally, in a couple of days, the family's notified. In Kansas City, we have a processing center that they stay there, and then they're transferred out to these various leased jail spaces. And that's the piece where, you know, they're making $99 a day to lease the jail space. It's a civil violation. It's not a criminal violation. And they're there for days to weeks. One case we're working with in Kansas City is a juvenile who is 15 years old and has been in detention for 14 weeks. The problem is trying to locate family members. And, of course, it's terror and fear in the community because they don't know how to get a hold of their loved one. And quite honestly, the spouse is usually undocumented as well. So they just don't have a path to follow to try and locate the family member and follow through on the perceived laws.
Put a human face on who are these immigrant families that you're talking about.
They're here and they're in our communities. They're in our schools. And from our perspective, a lot of the relationship is around the faith community. And so they're part of our faith community. They're very involved in their children's schools. They're working. It is truly our neighbor. So we have to address this issue as a people of faith. And once you address people as your neighbor, it's a little hard to use some of the stereotype and no longer use the term stranger.
You said most of these people who are into the detention system started with a simple violation. What is the nature of the cooperation between local police and ICE, and also what is the impact on the community if local police are cooperating with ICE?
Local police chiefs will say we do not cooperate with ICE, but clearly their individual officers do. It creates intense fear in the community because then the other crimes that you want reported, they don't feel safe to report those crimes. So then that becomes an issue for all of us and the safety in the community. Most police departments say they're not enforcing immigration law, but they are when they're turning someone over. And it's profiling. That's what we go back to. What evidence do you have that they're undocumented? They have an accent. They're brown. So the beginning of the process, there's a lot of problems in how they turn them over to ICE.
What should be the nature of immigration reform? What kind of legislation
What would you advocate?
There's generally about 7 platforms we stand by, and that is keeping families together to stop the deportations while we are in process of creating new immigration laws. And then there's also the piece of family unity, people who are trying to apply for family members. That wait is so extensively long. It's, you know, up to 14 years. Workplace protections for all workers. Humane and compassionate border control. My heartfelt request to ask for a moratorium on raids until we do achieve comprehensive immigration reform. We are so close right now. Why are we deporting families that will qualify next spring to a path for citizenship? And of course, that's the other piece I forgot, is creating that path to citizenship for people who qualify and want that.
Do you really think we're that close? And it seems as if the Obama administration has actually increased enforcement of immigration controls. Are they really going to press for reform?
I think they're going to press for reform. I think it's going to take events even like this to continually to remind our members of Congress that there are people who will support them if they will bravely step out and seek immigration reform. I do think we're close. The bad side is we are increasingly an enforcement-only environment, and Obama is supporting that, and that's very disappointing.
And again, your name?
Laurie Anderson.
Thank you for joining us. We are here with one of the sanctuary families. Tell us who you are and what your story is.
My name is Joe Chen. I have been here for 13 years. I'm married, have kids. All of them were born here, 3 of them. The youngest one is only 9 months old, and my wife's here too. We come here in search of human rights and freedom that we never had in China. And us with deportation proceeding, we are fighting very hard against it. This is kind of tough. They're the current immigration law. There's not really anything that could be able to protect our family, to keep our family together.
Are you in any immediate danger of deportation?
I'm still going in to check in with the ICE, the Immigration Enforcement Agency, once a month. Every time that I go, I may face immediate deportation or detention, not seeing my wife and my kids any moment, just like day to day.
How did ICE learn about you?
I came here 13 years ago as an asylum seeker. I was wishing that I could come here legally without any of these problems. But just because asylum case, and then our initial asylum case was failed, and that's how we get our deportation order.
Specifically, what was happening in China that caused you to come here seeking asylum?
That I spoke up against government's corruption, so that made me have to flee.
And what would it mean if ICE does tell you that you cannot stay here?
I may have to face the separation of my family. And then also because one child policy in China, you can only allow to have one kid. So I don't know if I ever get deported, who's going to support my kids? Are they going to just fall into foster care? I don't want my kids to be in foster care. We are the parents. I think that I could use my hand to support them, and we want to raise them here.
And how did you become involved with the sanctuary movement?
Oh, initially, I was searching for someone, a good lawyer, who would be able to represent us in court. Called different numbers, and then I called Human Rights First, and then they interviewed me, but I end up with they only help people who are in the beginning of the processing, not in a deportation procedure. So they refer me to an organization called Family for Freedom, which are family members who had those deportation orders, gather together, you know, try to fight against it to keep the family together. And then they introduced me to the New Century Movement, which we were in right now. They are helping us to the immigration check-in, and then also accompany us to a lawyer visit, make sure that lawyer does the right thing. But most of the time, unfortunately, lawyer, you know, took the money, didn't do what they supposed to do for their client. But our lawyer was okay. He's helpful. Hopefully, you know, with people's help and our church people's prayer, we'll be able to win our case. And then a bigger picture, we want to see a law that could pass to protect our family.
Well, thank you very much. And we certainly hope that you're going to be here a long time. And we'll be able to do a lot more interviews as you help other people who are immigrants who need to and should be able to stay. A are just welcoming our brother from Portland, Oregon, who's with one of these sanctuary movements. What's going on in Portland and what draws you into the struggle around sanctuary and the broader struggle for immigrants' rights?
We all are being called by our faith to be working for justice. That is moving us to be working and the defense of human rights, immigrants' rights, because immigrants have been taken as the guinea pig of this country to be blaming for a lot of different things in a time of crisis that we're going through. Because that, immigrants have been criminalized, persecuted, and that's why I'm standing for them.
In terms of your specific approach with the sanctuary movement, could you talk about that, especially in the context of your work in Portland?
In connection with what we're doing here is coming out, communities of faith, to detention centers where they are holding immigrants, a lot of innocent people, families, women, that we are in solidarity with them, but at the same time that we are demanding of the government to fix this broken system that we have. We have people that have been in immigration court for 2 years or more, not knowing what's going to happen to them. They have been victims of raids and detentions, and they don't know what the future is going to be like. That in that process, they cannot be working, so they have no means for feeding their kids and their families. So the sanctuary movement playing that role of solidarity in offering the sanctuary, if we wanted, in some cases, a physical sanctuary, giving space and homes and congregations to people that need it because they are in orders of deportation or because they're in this process of the immigration court that don't have means for living the everyday needs. Trying to change, you know, what the laws are to make a system that is more fair for immigrants and for everyone.
What has been the experience of the immigrant community in Portland, Oregon?
Well, 2 years ago, we had one of the biggest immigration raids in Portland. 167 people were taken to central detention center in Tacoma, and that was at the Del Monte plant. That was very devastating for our community because that, same as in other communities, you know, they got into the place, they took people away, people were waiting for their parents in schools, they didn't show up. It's kind of destabilizing a community. But at the same time that happened, people in the community reacted to that in a positive way, coming out to in solidarity with these people and starting working and getting more educated about what the real causes are of immigration, why immigrants are here in this country. Because it is not what the propaganda of the anti-immigrant groups are saying. Immigrants take jobs away, that immigrants come and take the taxes from the people, etc. Our communities are understanding better that the problem of immigration is really something that has been created not by the immigrants, but by the situations and the conditions that corporations and the economy, the global economy, is driving all over the place. In Mexico, after the North American Free Trade Agreement, immigration doubled because after that, what it did is it destroyed more than 1 million jobs in the countryside. And that was because the corporations from the United States took over and destroyed the corn industry in Mexico. So where are 1 million workers going to go and look for jobs?
Does the economic crisis make it more difficult to gain support for the plight of the immigrants today?
The economic crisis, it's again another opportunity for anti-immigrants to blame immigrants that were taking jobs away and all of that stuff. It's not really that the case. Immigrants are doing jobs that are not very traditional jobs that if immigrants leave today, tomorrow, there won't be U.S. citizens taking those jobs. But we will lose all of those jobs and those opportunities and that kind of services that they're providing for people. That's not a reality. But the crisis is impacting everyone. And these jobs that traditionally immigrants or very low-income workers have been doing, now they are losing it. And it's not just immigrants. If you see the day labor centers throughout the country, they're increasing in numbers of workers, but there's less jobs for them. The kind of jobs as, you know, cleaning the yard, doing some gardening, cleanings, basic construction work, those people are doing themselves because they don't have the money for paying somebody else. And that is affecting everyone, you know, not just immigrants, but all workers. You know.
What would you tell President Obama should be the nature of immigration reform?
What I will ask President Obama is to really understand what the immigration issue is, that the system that we have is broken, and that we really need to think about a humane and just immigration reform, not just a comprehensive immigration reform, because Bush had a comprehensive proposal, right? So it depends who's making it, that it becomes comprehensive for that group or that view. But I think it has to be
You're saying no bracero program?
Yeah, I don't believe in bracero programs and guest worker programs, because we see the statistics, again, the studies, a lot of the organizations and corporations have been utilizing workers from other countries to bring them in and to exploit them anyway. So it's an exploitive way of getting workers from other countries to be doing this job.
And my brother, you are?
Marco Mejia.
Marco, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We're here with a brother who came all the way from Oxnard, California. We're going to find out who he is and what his story is and involvement in this protest at the detention center on Varick Street.
La razón que estamos aquí, hola, mi nombre es Gerardo Santuario. La razón que estamos nosotros aquí es pidiendo ayuda, pues, más que nada que paren las deportaciones que han estado haciendo inmigración.
One of the reasons we're here is to ask that they stop the deportations of families. I have my wife Liliana and our three children in sanctuary in Simi Valley. It's because there are 12 million people who are living in the shadows, who are undocumented. And we're asking for an immigration reform for all of them. And so we're asking for an end to the raids, because there's so many families that are being separated. Children who are traumatized because they are seeing that their mothers and fathers are being taken away. And we're asking Barack Obama that there's an immigration reform, a fair immigration reform, as soon as possible. He has promised us that.
And what is my brother's specific story that caused him to seek the assistance of the sanctuary movement?
Porque mi esposa, ella no sé que no podía estar ahí en casa, porque la estaba siendo perseguida por ICE. Sí, lo que estaba pasando que la quería sacar del país. Mis hijos se traumaron mucho porque ellos tenían miedo y tienen miedo, pero ya no a lo igual, porque gracias a Dios que pienso yo que vamos a seguir luchando. Vamos a seguir.
Because my wife can't remain at home because she's being pursued by ICE. What happened is that they wanted to take her out of the country. My children were traumatized, and they're not so much anymore, but they were very traumatized. But I have faith, and we're going to continue to struggle. In May 17, 2007, ICE came to my house and they wanted to take away my wife. I remember very well that my daughter, who was 4 years old, Susie, woke up when they came into the house and she said, "Why would you take my mother? My mother is a good mother." My two-month-old baby woke up, and when I went back to get him, to pick him up, they even followed me as if I was a criminal. And I, because I'm a Catholic, started to pray. I prayed to all the saints and to the Virgin of Guadalupe. I'm a person of a great faith, and I had a strong feeling that they just could not take away my wife. And so when I had the baby, I took the baby, and I came close to the official, and I said, "What would you do in my case? I have this little baby here. What would you do?" And so thanks be to God for that. They didn't take away my wife. I think the official must have been moved by that. And thanks be to God they didn't take away my wife. And so we're going to continue in sanctuary because my wife needs to be free. And she's not a criminal either.
Are there more cases like yours in your neighborhood, in your city? And are the violations by the ICE police increasing?
Sí, hace más o menos aproximadamente como hace un mes y medio, también se llevaron a un compañero de allí del área cerca de nosotros también. Parece que él tenía este probación.
Yeah, just a little while ago, I'm aware of a friend that they took away just in our area. And he had permission from immigration, but when he went to his hearing, they handcuffed him and deported him. And now I have to face his wife and his children who are suffering the consequences of what they did. Why doesn't the government think before doing these things?
Well, thank you very much. That's a good question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, wait, we need to find out the name of our wonderful translator.
My name is Alice Linsmeyer, and I'm the director of Ventura County Clergy and Lady United for Economic Justice, or VCCLU.
Thank you.
Rabbi Michael Feinberg.
To close, maybe we can pray together and unite our hearts and spirits. Thank you for coming out on another step toward justice together. God of justice, God of all humanity, you gather us here in all of our magnificent diversity to be of one heart, of one mind, of one intention, to speak truth to power, to resist unjust laws and policies that are tearing apart families and entire communities across the country, to instill in us a vision of our common humanity, a humanity that transcends all borders, all boundaries, all fences. Keep that vision in our hearts and instill it in the hearts of all the people of this country. Remove from our hearts and our minds racism, xenophobia, nationalism, all that blinds us and divides us. Keep this our goal. Help us work toward the day when we not only beat swords into plowshares, but we convert immigrant detention centers to immigrant welcome centers. This is our work together here today and for all of our days. And together we say, Amen.
I thought that poem was just lovely, and I'm going to keep in my mind converting immigrant detention centers into immigrant welcome centers. Beautiful. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.